Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Every Wednesday morning at 9, Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today we're on location at the Executive Women in Government Leadership Summit. During today's show, we will be talking with the women who have dedicated their careers to public service. The Executive Women in Government was founded in 1973. The Executive Women in Government is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization comprised of federal government women executives. Members prepare, promote, and support women for senior leadership positions in the federal government and the military through networking, shared knowledge, experience, and mentoring. Our first guest is Catherine Kaufman, Assistant Commissioner of the Office of Human Resources. She manages a centralized human resources program providing services to nearly 60,000 nationwide and overseas CPB employees. First, Catherine, I want to welcome you and thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Catherine, you've been at CBP now for quite a few years. So tell me a little bit about how you came to CBP. Was there something in particular that sparked your passion to go work at that government agency?
Yes, actually, for the previous 25 years, I had worked primarily in Department of Defense for the Marine Corps, for Defense Intelligence Agency, as well as the Navy. As a military spouse, worked primarily for DOD. But Customs and Border Protection is part of Department of Homeland Security, and it has an incredible mission. And so when I saw that there was a deputy assistant commissioner for the Office of Human Resource Management, I felt that that position was mine. And so I had applied for the position and interviewed, primarily because it was such a diverse, but also has a national security mission. And because of my previous experience working with defense, I felt it was a strong match.
So, Catherine, tell us a little bit about your role at CBP. What do you do?
Oh, I love my role at CBP. I have a workforce of about 600 people, and we take care of about 60,000 employees. And we go from the full gamut of how do we hire the employees to not only hiring them, bringing them on board, but working with them throughout their full career to their retirement. We take care of them for any employee and labor relations issues, their benefits, any injuries that they might have. And really, our job is to make sure that we provide the support to the officers and agents to the front line so they don't have to worry about their compensation and taking care of themselves or their family. So our job is to support the officers and agents, the front line.
And so I can imagine one of the things when I think about CBP, you have such a diverse work population. You've got lots of people who have kind of standard office jobs, but then you have many, many agents in the field who are worldwide, as you said, and in probably a lot of remote locations. Does that present any particular challenges from an HR perspective?
There are a lot of challenges with that, primarily because the officers and the agents, we have Customs and Border Protection officers and Border Patrol agents, air interdiction agents, and marine interdiction agents. So that's air, land, sea, in between the ports and at the ports. And the officers are not generally at a computer. They're with the public, and they're out in between the ports. It's really hard to provide that connectivity and to communicate with the employees. And so our job is to make sure that they're not worried about getting the information. We need to provide the information to them in a variety of areas. We communicate by text, by email, just a variety of ways. But because they're 24/7 and the work that they do is often isolated or they're with many, many people at the same time, we have to be able to connect with them when they're ready to be connected with. And so that is a challenge.
Catherine, you've been at Customs Border Protection for quite a few years. What gave you your passion that keeps you there and focused on helping the employees that you support?
I have a lot of passion about the people that work there at CBP. And the primary passion is because the employees rely on the mission support, and the work that we do does make a difference for our employees. And it's the passion not only for the customers, but for the employees of HRM. They're all committed to being professionals and providing the service to our employees. So when we have the government shutdown, for example, we had employees who were either getting married or moving from one location to another. Their wives were having children. We needed to provide service to those employees during the government shutdown that happened a few years ago, that we were passionate in making sure that they did not have a break in their benefits and their family was covered. When we are looking at hiring the Customs and Border Protection officers throughout the country, our job is to make sure that we can hire highly qualified candidates, get them at the right place at the right time, and with the right skills. So our job is to make sure that we are hiring the excellent applicants to come in that has the integrity and the tenacity to be an officer and agent. And so we have a lot of passion in making sure that we know how to screen for the pre-employment physical fitness and the cognitive tests, and that they're able to be healthy and be able to have the tenacity for these 24/7 horrendous jobs. They're horrendous in the physical and the mental requirement to be the officer and agent to protect this country. So our passion is making sure that we provide the country with the workforce that it's needed in order to protect our borders.
Well, first, thank you. So if somebody out there who's listening is interested in becoming a member of the force there at CPB, how can they get involved?
That's great. I'm really glad you're asking. We have our vacancy announcements open right now for officer and an agent. You go to usajobs.com. USAjobs.com, and you can do a search on U.S. Customs and Border Protection. We have an announcement open for our Border Patrol agents and Customs and Border Protection officers, and those jobs are open on a regular basis for about 10 to 14 days. And when we advertise, we're looking for about 16,000 people to apply each time. And then 6 weeks later, we'll open that announcement again. And going through that application process, people will put their application in. They'll take a test. There's a cognitive test, reading, thinking, language testing, and so forth. And then from there, they'll get a tentative job offer. And then we'll schedule them for a physical, making sure that they're hearing, eyesighted, and all of that as well. They'll go through a physical fitness test. They'll either go through an oral board, they'll be interviewed by a panel, or there'll be a video-based test. And then we'll go through a background investigation and a polygraph examination. And when they complete all of that, we will have them go through a second physical fitness test as well as a drug test. That whole process takes a little less than a year. We are working to make sure that we can truncate that time, but still have that rigorous process. And so the announcements are open on a regular basis, and we have job fairs throughout the country. We have a website, cbp.gov, and you can go to our career webpage and find information out about the careers that we have at CBP.
And so, Catherine, what sort of educational backgrounds or work experience, particularly with the officers, are you looking for?
So we don't have a positive education requirement. They don't have to have a college degree or not. Of course, the high school degree, or GED, and the years of experience is really a general experience is required. But what we're really looking for are people who are interested in meeting and working with the public and protecting this country as far as making sure that we keep bad things and bad people outside the borders, and that we only facilitate the travel and the jobs that we do is important to not only the national security of keeping bad things out, but also facilitation of commerce. Because of the customs, we collect the custom fees as products are coming in. And so there's a wide variety. It's amazing the variety of requirements that we have at CBP. But for the minimum requirement is really just general experience. And we bring people in at the GS-5 level or GS-7, and that is depending upon their experience. We are really interested in hiring veterans and very much interested in hiring women. as well as African Americans, Asians, you know, the full gamut of our population of this great country.
We're speaking with Catherine Kaufman, Assistant Commissioner of the Office of Human Resources Management at Customs and Border Protection at the Executive Women in Government Leadership Summit. You're listening to a special edition of Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we have a special episode of Women of Washington at the Executive Women of Government event in Washington, D.C. And in this segment, we're talking to Catherine Kaufman, Assistant Commissioner of Office of Human Resources at the Customs and Border Protection.
So, Catherine, many of our listeners are interested to hear how women like yourself, like the other women that we'll talk to today at the EWG Summit, got their start. So let's go back and talk a little bit about your upbringing. Did you grow up in the D.C. area or somewhere else?
I was actually born and raised in California. And when I was 13, my family moved up to Southern Oregon. They bought a resort called The Last Resort on this little man-made lake. I was a freshman in high school. And actually, it was during the Christmas break, and I met a young man. And here, 37 years later, he's my husband. We've been married for 37 years. I was a graduate from high school of about 72 other students. It was small high school. I was married about 3 or 4 years after high school. And we moved down to San Francisco area. My husband was in the Marines at the time. And we decided to take a tour to Sigonella, Sicily. Was there for 2 years. As far as my career, I started the first job in Sicily for 4 days. I got a job, and I decided to quit because I had a daughter that was at home that was a year old. And because my husband traveled quite a bit. So I started for my first job for 4 days, and then a few months later, I started the second job and lasted 10 months, and then it was 6 weeks, and then it was 6 months. And in the end, it took me about 6 years to get 2 years of experience. So we were in Sicily for a couple of years. We moved to 29 Palms, worked for a couple more months there, finished an associate's degree. My husband, again, with the Marines, was traveling everywhere. And then we went from 29 Palms to Okinawa, Japan. And we were there for about 7 years. It was during the Gulf War time frame. Had 2 children at the time. And I had, again, started at probably my 5th job as a GS-3. And started, again, with the 2 children at home. And I said, you know, I have got to finish getting my education. And I did. I was able to finally get a bachelor's degree from University of Maryland. And when I got done with that, I was offered 3 intern positions at the same time. The Marine Corps was offering a variety of intern programs to recent college graduates. And I had an opportunity to get picked up as a contract specialist, as a program manager, or as an HR specialist. And without a doubt, HR specialist was the calling for me. And that's where I started my career and was there as a GS-5. GS-7, made it to the GS-9 level, and our orders then went from Okinawa, Japan, to Camp Pendleton, California. So I got picked up there and was able to get promoted to the GS-11 with a staffing classification, doing the hiring and so forth for the Marine Corps, and was eventually promoted to a GS-12 as a project manager. And in Camp Pendleton, for the Marines on the West Coast, they had 6 different Marine Corps locations. And I was responsible for traveling between all of those locations in a HR capacity. And I was getting very frustrated with the travel and the family and so forth. So I decided to quit. We opened a candy store called Something Sweet in Temecula, California, and had the store for about a year and a half. My husband was still in the Marines, still traveling, and my daughter was in high school, and our son was in about 7th grade at the time. Camp Pendleton HR office called me and asked me to come back as a supervisor as a GS-12. So I did. I hired a woman to run the candy store for us, and so now I had the candy store. I'm working, and my husband's still traveling, and the 2 kids. And it was a bit too much. Since we had already been overseas on 2 different tours, we decided to sell the candy store. My husband retired, We rented out the house, and I took a job in Naples, Italy, and the family went there for 3 years. It was absolutely fantastic. So we were there for 3 years, and we decided again to move back to San Diego for the kids, so my daughter could finish her bachelor's degree and our son could get into a good high school. And in the end, I worked at a Navy HR office in San Diego. My husband had picked up a great job as a civilian, and our daughter ended up going to a fantastic Department of Defense organization as a civilian, and our son got a scholarship through the ROTC program, and today he's a naval aviator, and our daughter has just finished a 5-year tour in Japan. She's getting ready to go to Germany. When our kids went off, my husband and I were in San Diego, the two of us, as an empty nester. In 2004, we decided that the commute in San Diego was just too horrendous. So we sold the house in California and moved to D.C. for a better commute, actually. And that's where I was able to go from the Department of Defense organization, the intelligence community, and then I came into CBP. So in a nutshell, all that rounds up to about 30 years of federal experience, and it passed in a minute. And it's just been a really incredible career.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations on 37 years of marriage.
Thank you.
And on completing not only your associate's but your bachelor's degree while you had a couple of children and were overseas. That's really some great accomplishments. And you've done so much. It's I would ask you what your secret to success, but it's got to be multitasking, right?
Well, maybe multitasking. But the other is just the secret is saying yes to different opportunities. When I was in San Diego, there was a leadership program that came open through the Department of Defense called Defense Leadership and Management Program, DLAMP. And I was able to go to University of California and get a master's degree in global leadership. From there, when my husband and I moved to the D.C. area, we were both able to go to one of the war colleges, and I was able to get a second master's degree. And so it really is being able to see opportunities out there and being prepared for those opportunities. So I was a slow starter in my career. The family, my husband traveled, his career was very, very, very much important. But every time we made a decision, it was family first, but also being prepared for those opportunities. And so when I finished the second master's degree and that deputy assistant commissioner HR job came open at CBP, I knew I was ready. I knew I could do it. My kids were gone, empty nesters again, and a very supportive husband, amazing husband.
And so how is your commute now? I don't think I've ever heard of anybody moving to the D.C. area for the commute, especially after the commute that several of us had this morning and many mornings. So how have you found that to be here?
I have found the commute to be really fantastic, really fantastic. We live in Vienna. Then we strategically bought a place that was right by the metro, so I live a couple blocks from the metro, and the office that I commute to is 2 blocks from the metro, all on the Orange Line. And so I have the flexibility of driving, coming in fairly early, or the ability of the metro. So here in the D.C. area, we really have the gift of the mass transit, and that's really nice to be able to use that.
Well, Catherine, if I make one observation, you have tenacity and flexibility. As a military dependent, watching my mom move across the country, your tenacity of staying focused on getting your career on, keeping on track and finishing your degree is amazing. So I got to ask you, if you were to go back to Catherine before all of this, journey that you've been on, and you were to give Catherine 3 pieces of advice to help her stay on track to reach the goals that you did, to be able to achieve that balance that you've been able to, what would you tell her?
I would tell her family is first, forever. No matter what you do, you can never regret your decision if your decisions are based on family. You could regret your decision if you base it on your career, because you can, I believe you can, have what have it all, as they speak about. You just don't have to have it all at once. And so there is a phase. And the second is really about long-term planning. Throughout this journey, I ended up, when I was 29, I ran my first 3-mile race. And I've not stopped running since then. I've ran 4 marathons during these past few years. And so I would say the advice is, don't ever give up and just look for the goals of having the tenacity to stay through through that commitment. Those four marathons has really changed my life as an individual and as a leader. I draw on those experiences where things get tough, things get challenging. It's beautiful. There's scenes. There's just a freedom of thought and movement running, but also it takes a commitment to yourself and a commitment to the goal. And so the second piece of advice is stay committed. You know where you want to go and don't get detoured. And the third is rely on your friends and your family for advice. Use them as sounding boards. As a military family member, having to move from one location to the other, how to reach out to others. Is this a good idea? Is it not? Most of the moves I had was before the internet, before cell phones. You know, it was using the typical phone and writing letters to family. But the fact of the matter is, you have to reach out to people, however the technology supports you. So that people are there for you to help you make the informed decisions and make the right decisions.
Did you ever have a chance, through this, when you're balancing it, and you can have everything, but you just can't have it all the time? Were there hard choices that you had to make along the way? And if you did make hard choices, what was the strategy that you used to make those choices?
Yeah, the hard choices was about family, the children first, my husband's career first, or myself at some point. You know, when I finished my bachelor's degree in Okinawa, I actually started a master's degree in Okinawa, and it wasn't the right time because of the family issues. When I moved to Camp Pendleton, I started again with a master's degree. Not the right time because of my daughter going into college and the son going into high school and my husband's career. When we ended up going to Naples, Italy, it was a third time to start my master's degree, and I made the decision to stop again. My husband got his master's degree, and my children with the school. It was always about whose turn is it to accomplish whatever goal. And so in the end, when we moved back to the San Diego area, I was able to then go into that leadership program, get a master's degree, and it was the right degree at the right time from a really amazing college. So the decisions, those are always tough decisions. Is it my turn or not? You know, having the candy store, should we do it or not? Should we move to D.C. or not? They're tough decisions because it involves other people and their lives. But just, again, talking with the family and to find out what do we want to do as a family unit, and then listening to everybody, and you decide together.
Catherine, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. We're speaking with Catherine Kaufman, Assistant Commissioner of the Office of Human Resources Management at Customs and Border Protection at the Executive Women in Government Leadership Summit. You're listening to a special edition of Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we have a special episode of Women of Washington. We're at the Executive Women of Government event in Washington, D.C., and in this segment, we're talking with Shoshana Grove. Shoshana currently serves as the Secretary and Chief Administrative Officer at the Postal Regulatory Commission. First, Shoshana, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and joining us here and speaking us on Women of Washington.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
So, Shoshana, if you could tell us a little bit about your role at the Postal Regulatory Commission and what you do.
I am the Chief Administrative Officer as well as the Secretary of the Commission, so I am responsible for all of the administrative functions. So that would include human resources, information technology, finance, facilities, and anything else that might come up.
Shoshana, in reading your bio, you started off at the ground floor as a letter carrier. So you've really lived the dream of figuring out how to maneuver and go from the ground floor position of a letter carrier to a very senior executive position at the Postal Regulatory Commission. Tell me about that journey.
That is funny. I never really thought that I would start out as a foot carrier with a satchel on my back in Washington, D.C. In those days, we didn't have cars, so you showed your badge and rode the bus to your route. And it was very... at that time, it was not a job that women did. I was the only woman letter carrier in our branch when we started out. And then a few years later, through very hard work and a lot of persistence, I was made the supervisor of letter carriers, and I was the first woman in our area to do that job, and later first woman postmaster in our area, et cetera. And I think that, and it was very, very difficult. I think many days I came back, you know, crying, literally crying after. There was a lot of really some mistreatment back then of women who were doing that role, because I think there was a perception it was really a man's kind of job and that women shouldn't be coming in and doing the job. So that seems like so many years ago now. I mean, I don't think young women today think of that, of those kind of barriers to going into blue-collar positions, but we know that there still are many, many barriers to women going into well-paying blue-collar jobs as opposed to going into food service or other type of service jobs. So I think while barriers are still there, a lot of women don't think they're that so much they're there.
It was physical labor, and I don't think, like you said, a lot of women think about that today, but can you share what strategies you use when you had one of those days that you were felt like the dog that got kicked?
I was delivering mail in a very posh part of Washington, D.C., up near the embassies, and I was pushing the mail through the door slot of this big, gorgeous mansion, and as I opened the door, it was about 110 degrees out, and the air conditioning just wafted out of that door slot, and I put my head down, and I was, like, letting the air conditioning come out, and, like, sobbing of tears were coming down my face, and a very nice gentleman opened the door, and he had a silk lounging like coat and the little slippers and everything, and offered me a glass of ice water. And it was, and I just said to myself, dear Lord, do not let this be my job for the rest of my life. I just couldn't see that being, you know, the end.
So take us back even maybe before you took that first job or got that first job as the postal carrier, because it was such an unusual job back then for a woman to have. We wouldn't blink twice now to see a woman mail carrier. But what made you want to do that job?
It was a very high-paying job relative. I was still going through college. I didn't have a college degree at that time. And it was a very well-paying job. It was certainly more better paying than being a shop clerk at then Hex. It was before Woodward and Lothrop and Lord and Taylor. But it was better, certainly paid better than being a shop clerk or many other jobs that you would customarily have as you were or a waitress as you were working your way through school. So I went to do the job. Someone told me that they were hiring for part-time carriers down at my local post office in my neighborhood. And I thought, well, this is a very well-paid job, and there's no reason that I shouldn't be able to do it and collect that good pay. And then, because I'm stubborn, when I saw that there was, that it was a gender-breaking situation and that there was a combination of admiration but also disdain by some, it just made me more determined that I was going to break in there.
At what point did you realize that, hey, I think I can make a career out of this?
I was actually a pretty horrible letter carrier. And let me take that back. There are certain situations where you deliver to the big high-rise buildings. And in order to do that, and less these days because there are little rings that can read addresses and stuff, but in the old days, to do a lot of the sorting of the mail, either into the boxes at big high-rises or clerical sorting, everything was memorized. And I have an extremely good memory. So the supervisor learned that he could put me into a relatively unknown situation, and very quickly I could get the mail sorted fast. So I was able to get into some more desirable delivery roles, and then ultimately I was able to get into an inside job as a clerical role, which again was a lot of memorization for the sorting. And when I went into the clerical role, my supervisor liked to go out to the bar and, you know, drink some beer once the cures hit the street around 11 o'clock, and he wouldn't come back till the end of the day. And so I, this is way back. I'm sure this does not happen now, but I know, in fact, it doesn't, but this was way 40 years ago. And so I would pick up the managerial work in the office when my supervisor, I'm sure is long retired, went out. So in that way, I was able to learn all of the supervisory and managerial role of the office. So when the supervisor job came open, I applied for it. But of course, I was not given consideration. And so I made a protest about that. And at the time, I was passed over, but subsequently, they did give me a supervisory role. And that was kind of the beginning of it.
Good for you, standing up.
Well, thank you.
You were a postmaster, actually, it looks like in the Reston Herndon area, which means that you were overseeing my mail.
Yeah.
So
I hope you have good mail.
Well, I wouldn't have brought it up if I didn't feel that way. But tell me a little bit about what a postmaster does and how did you get that role?
Much like the job I have now, a postmaster is over all of, and in, as you know, in Herndon, the Herndon post office is both Herndon and Reston. So we have the Reston post office, the Reston branch, the Herndon main office, and I think now there's an Oak Hill branch that we built when I was there. So there's many offices, and you as the postmaster are the one who is over everything. You have the finance and budget, the personnel, the labor relations, the facilities, the roof leaks. It's an all-encompassing. And first and foremost, you also have the public service. You have the relationship with the community.
We're speaking with Shoshana Grove, Secretary and Chief Administrative Officer, Postal Regulatory Commission, at the Executive Women in Government Leadership Summit. You're listening to a special edition of Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we have a special episode of Women of Washington at the Executive Women of Government event in Washington, D.C. We're talking with Shoshana Grove. Shoshana currently serves as the Secretary and Chief Administrative Officer at the Postal Regulatory Commission.
As we talked in the last segment, you know, you were the first female mail carrier in your particular area. And so I'm sure you were the first many times in your career. How about dealing with reactions to that? What strategies did you use? I'm sure that there was resistance at times.
Yeah. I mean, when I went into my first supervisory role, I know there was one gentleman who said that he would never work for a woman, and he transferred out of my unit. But later he ended up transferring back because I think not maybe because he thought I was so great, but it just he liked working in the unit, and he just realized that it wasn't really so bad. But I when I first started out, I was very much by the rule book. Maybe I am still a lot by the rule book, but I was very much by the rule book. And from the earlier story I told you, things were pretty loose. And so I came in very just wanting to put a lot of change in very quickly. Sometimes something they teach you now, don't try to change everything all at once. But I just wanted like to change a lot fast. And the other managers who had already been in place were very askance and told me that I was wet behind the ears and I didn't know what I was doing, and et cetera. And so they loaded me down with work. I was given like, you know, three huge assignments to do simultaneously, hoping I would just be so busy it would keep me out of trouble and I wouldn't be raising a big ruckus all the time, which I had to do. But I think that was a good thing, because I think that when more responsibility is given to you, that helps you grow in your field and helps you learn more. And then ultimately it led the way for me moving up into a larger managerial role.
Today we're talking with Shoshana Grove, Secretary, Chief Administrative Officer at Postal Regulatory Commission. Shoshana, that's an incredible story. Did you have any mentors along the way that maybe helped show you the way of, or the better way to approach things there at the Postal Service?
I did. I'll have to call him and ask him to listen. But my first great mentor, who was a mentor to many of us in my cohort group coming up as a postmaster, was a gentleman named Curtis Weed. We used to call him the Weed Whacker. But I don't know. But he just was a very, very charismatic person. And he had a certain management style. And he would cultivate people that he felt embodied his management style, and it was a very effective one. He was a people person, he was a delegator, and he understood that surrounding himself with very talented people was the way that he was going to be successful. And ultimately he rose, and as he rose, the people that were his mentees rose up with him. And I think this is a common model, and that for both the mentor and the mentee, or the mentor partners, which is something that we heard a lot about today at Executive Women in Government, is mentor partnering, is that as that the ship rises for all. So
have you had a chance to be a mentor? And if you have spoken to your mentee, what is your approach?
I do have several mentees through various organizations that I have, and I certainly have mentored people along the way. Because of the very difficult road that I had to go down in my career, it was very important to me to make sure that other people, not just women, but other people coming up, were really not only given a fair shot, but had really good working conditions that were very supportive for people who worked hard. So for that reason, not only did I mentor within the workplace, but I became involved with career fairs, with organizations, with the diversity inclusion teams within the Postal Service. And every place I worked, I always volunteered my time to give classes. It was very interesting. Most recently, I spoke to a good friend of mine who was a fellow postmaster and who now has he's now the director of human resources at the Postal Service Office of Inspector General. And he said, "Sho, I don't know if you remember when we first met, but when we first met, you were giving a course on how to write your resume. And I was a letter carrier at the time." He said, "I will never forget what you told me that day." And it was just such a great thing to hear him say that I didn't even remember he was in my class. He later became my boss at one point. So it was just really a great, very heartwarming story.
Do you remember what you told him that day?
Well, he told me, he said that I said that when you, he said, "I'm just a letter carrier. What do I put on my resume to say that I'm qualified to be a supervisor?" And I said, "Every day, be thinking about your resume and think, can I volunteer for the safety committee? Can I ask my supervisor if he needs help with this?" And just think about what things you can do and how they could be put on your resume in the form of what we call the star of the situation, task, action, and result. What was the problem? What did you do about it? What was the measurable result? And he said the next day I went and asked my supervisor if there was something that I could volunteer for, and they gave me an assignment, and that was it.
So obviously you've had this passion around, as you said, around mentoring for a long time and helping people. We're here at the Executive Women in Government's Leadership Summit, and there are just many fantastic women who've had great careers themselves and had a lot of success, and they're giving their time to help the next generation of would-be leaders. Can you talk a little bit about that and what motivates, you've been involved in the organization for quite a while now and in leadership positions, what motivates these women to spend the time that it takes out of their very, very busy lives to give back to younger government women working in government?
No, it's so interesting. Rhonda, our vice president, who has really led the summit this year, said that when when Secretary James, Secretary of the Air Force, was asked to speak here today, she told her staff, I don't care what you need to do, I am going to speak at that conference. And it was so heartwarming to hear that. But my experience with other women who've served on our board and our organization is that that women who've achieved success in their careers really want to give back and help bring others up, bring other talented people up.
So, Shoshana, you had such an interesting journey and a phenomenal career going from a ground floor position to a senior executive level service role. So if you were to go back to Shoshana and see her, like that story that you told of when you were delivering the mail and the hot air outside was stifling and you just caught a little bit of that air conditioning out of that mail carrier vent, what would you tell her to help her achieve the results you have or go beyond?
That is a really difficult question. In some ways, I would have to say that going back, I would not change anything about what I did. In advising my brilliant and fantastic daughter, I do give her a little bit different advice, but she is a different person than I am. And the person that I am, a little bit rebellious, a little bit of a fighter, and a little bit outside of the box, I think the path that I took was one that was suitable for me, and I'm happy with where it got me.
We're speaking with Shoshana Grove, Secretary and Chief Administrative Officer at the Postal Regulatory Commission at the Executive Women in Government Leadership Summit. You're listening to a special edition of Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday mornings at 9 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.